I'm Renee Von Medding. Welcome to Disordered, a podcast about food, our relationship with our bodies, and learning to live and love yourself again. I am not an expert in eating disorders, but I am someone who has lived with one for almost two decades. I'm not here to give medical advice, but simply to try and unpick some of the complexity of disordered eating through a series of conversations I will have with people who are speaking from firsthand experience. Disordered eating will impact each and every one of us at some point in our lives. I want to delve deeper. At what point does disordered eating become an eating disorder? Through looking closer at the spectrum of these mental illnesses, I hope that you will be challenged in your own view of what an eating disorder looks like. Hi, Amanda, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming in today.
No problem at all.
Today I'm speaking to Amanda from Dublin, who has battled with anorexia for most of her adult life. She has been treated as an inpatient multiple times. Amanda is in a place of active illness, and her bravery in speaking to me for this podcast was astounding. I know that this was very difficult for her, but it was also important for people to see the reality of what an eating disorder does. Perhaps even saying these things out loud will lessen their power. So you grew up in Dublin, or?
Yeah. I've lived in Kilmore like all my life. Like, I've never moved ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And brothers and sisters. What sort of family setup?
I'm the youngest of six, so I have three brothers and two sisters.
One of the questions I've been asking people is to try, like, even for myself, trying to remember back pre disorder of any kind, and like trying to remember what I was like, and I sometimes find that hard to remember.
Yeah.
But like, do you remember like being a child? What games did you like? What shows did you like? What toys?
Loved dolls, like absolutely. Like, I was obsessed with dolls. Me and my friend.
Any particular kind, or?
Like, I had them all. I had Baby Born.
Oh yeah, everyone always has Baby Born.
Baby Annabelle. Oh yeah. Baby Expressions. Yeah. Like every, like, what I used to like, I wouldn't put dolls' clothes on them. I'd only put real baby clothes on them. I only use real baby bottles, real baby nappies. Like, everything had to be real.
Yeah.
I think I actually thought they were actually, like, real.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you'd never see, like, me without a boogie.
Like, another thing, like, I know myself with my kids, like, they're just, when they love a food, they love a food, and that's it. You know, that childlike, you know, you don't think about it, you don't, you know, try and analyze it, you just love it. Like, did you have a food like that before anything started?
I think, like, I would have, like, I loved cereal. Like, I would have ate cereal, like, morning and night. Like, but I probably would have been a fussy eater. Like, I wouldn't really like trying new things. Uh-huh.
And is cereal still your thing that you?
No. It's now a fear food. Like, so, yeah, that has changed.
It's means something completely different now.
Yeah.
Eating disorders can present at any age and no matter what is going on in an individual's life. In most cases, they develop after a period of stress or trauma. Disordered eating behaviors are a way of trying to manage difficult feelings in a person's life. It's a coping mechanism. Being aware of triggers can be a vital tool in catching these behaviors before they develop into a disorder. Education about other co-occurring issues such as anxiety, depression, OCD, trauma, and substance abuse issues can be helpful, as these will often tie into a person's behavior and feelings around food and themselves. Disordered behaviors around food are not always about the food. Early intervention and outpatient treatment has been shown to be the quickest and most long-term route to a person's recovery. When did things start to change for you? Like, as a child, as a teenager, do you remember a point in time where something happened or a series of things happened?
I think, like, I just probably didn't realise, like, you know, that, like, anything was disordered. Like, when I was probably, like, 14, 15 and stuff, I used to compare myself to other people, like, even people in school. I'd be like, oh, like, she looks real thin, and like, I look so much bigger compared to her. Or if I ate, like, I didn't restrict my food or anything, but I had massive food guilt if I ate. Like, I'd be like, oh, I shouldn't have ate that, but I would still like eat something the next time, but I'd still have the guilt. That was kind of in my teen. Like, I would have had anxiety as well that I didn't realize was anxiety.
Sure.
So, like, I'd be having, like, wouldn't be able to breathe, but I'd think that I had, I was like, I think I have asthma.
And you wouldn't know it's probably a panic attack or something.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
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 So there wasn't, like, do you remember then, like, was there a moment when you did start restricting or?
Yeah, like, probably, like, I, like, would have, probably early 20s, like, I was really starting to get really conscious of it.
Yeah.
But I was kind of choosing what foods I would eat and what foods I wouldn't eat, but I still wasn't even thinking that was an eating disorder. Like, do you know, I was
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of people would be in that situation of not thinking that a certain behaviour is possibly disordered.
Yeah. It was only, like, probably, like, it's probably 8 years now where I have been full-blown, like, eating disorder behaviours and...
And how old are you now?
I'm 32.
Okay.
Yeah, so... my math is very bad. So, like,
so what, 24? Yeah, 24.
Yeah, like, that's when it really took a grip.
Yeah.
And
was there something that happened?
See, previous to that, like, a lot of people in my family had gotten sick, like aunts and uncles and my nana, and my dad wasn't well either. So, like, there was a lot of, like, times where, like, we'd be called to hospital for, like they'd think my nana was going to die, or, like, we had an aunt that died really suddenly, and it was just constant, like, debt and constant, like, people getting really sick really fast. And, like, you were afraid to pick up the house phone, like, at the time, because you were, like, you don't know who's going to be on the other end saying somebody had died. And, like, even to this day, if my house phone rings, like, my stomach goes into a knot because I'm like, oh, my God, someone's dead. Like, it was just nonstop. And my dad was really sick as well. He had kidney failure and... he was on, like, dialysis and stuff as well. So it was just constant state of anxiety. Like, it was an off, like, it was like five family members that died in the space of, like, 3 years or something. Like, and I would have been really close to my mom's side of the family. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was all them that were kind of getting sick. And
it seems to be, like, I know for myself, when, you know, I kind of suffered very badly on and off for about 10 years. And when I don't want to use the word, but I suppose relapsed really badly, it was in response to kind of a similar, you know, medical trauma in the family. And it's a way of coping, isn't it? It's like it's a way of controlling something.
Yeah, and you don't even, like when I first started going to therapy, like, for my eating disorder, and the therapist was like, oh, it's a way of controlling, like, your anxiety. And I was like, yeah. Like, but in my head, I was like, what is she talking about? This is not about control. Like, what the hell? Like,
yeah.
But I was oblivious to it, like, because it's not a conscious decision that you make, that you're like, okay, I'm just not going to, like, eat, and then my anxiety will be okay. It just manifests, like, it's so strange.
I know, it starts slowly, and then by the time you actually get to a point that you can recognize what is going on,
but it's,
you're
like,
kind of already
control.
In it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's totally to control how you feel. And
yeah, it's like... a lot of people look at eating disorders as like a physical thing, and actually they're really not.
No.
It's completely
it's a mental health
disorder that just happens to have an aspect of it that manifests itself physically.
Yeah, it's like that's the consequence to it. Like, it's, I always say, like, it's a mental disorder, it's not a weight disorder.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And a lot of people, I think, don't really recognize that. Like, a lot of people think, you know, for someone who's anorexic, okay, just refeed them and put the weight on and then they'll be fine. And actually, no, that's not what's going to happen. Or someone who's a binge eater, control the binge eating, go back to, like, a relatively normal diet and things will be fine. And actually, that's not the case. Like, if you don't figure out what is actually causing
the primary cause, like, then it's...
and work on those issues, there's no chance.
You probably know yourself, like, when you're, like, say, like, if you've had treatment or you're refeeding and stuff, and, like, your weight has gone up and you're probably a normal BMI, or that's terrifying to me, because I do think that people think I'm fixed now because I'm renourished, like, but it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, your physical might be, but your mental could still be as bad.
Some people assume that if you were to do intensive inpatient treatment for your eating disorder, then you would be well on the road to recovery. While this may be true for some people, for others, this is just not the case. So many people relapse as soon as they leave inpatient treatment. Leaving an environment where you are fully supported and surrounded by people who are assisting you in your recovery is a complete shock to the system. You find yourself back in the environment where your eating disorder began. Despite the progress made as an inpatient, once they are back home, many people find themselves in a triggering environment with next to nothing in terms of mental health support. There is often no transition between full-time support and being expected to go it alone once your stay is up or your health insurance runs out. One might wonder, if there was more transitional support from inpatient treatment to home life, would less people relapse? You mentioned kind of, you know, recovery or refeeding. Have you gone through that process at some point?
I did 2 inpatient admissions. As an adult, yeah. In an eating disorder unit in Sutton in Dublin. Mm-hmm. It's called Lowe's Bridges.
Yeah.
And so like I did the first admission I did there was 12 weeks and then I got extended for 4 weeks, so 16 altogether. The second one was 12 weeks as well. That was 2 years ago. I found like the treatment was brilliant. Like the team are amazing. It's 12 weeks and then you have to go back home to your normal environment, and that's where your eating disorder is before you leave. Yeah. To go
it's in
there.
Your own private secret kind of environment.
So I found I relapsed straight away basically both times, and because I'm going back to my community mental health team who don't specialize in eating disorders and have told me like this is not your area of expertise, and so they don't know how to help you. So I went from 24/7 care to 1 hour of therapy a week. It's like a culture shock,
So say after your first inpatient treatment and then you went back into the community, was there any sort of support available to you besides that 1 hour of therapy a week? Was there any support groups, any networks, any Facebook groups, anything?
There was absolutely, there isn't even a dietitian like on my community mental health team. Wow. So I think the first admission, I don't think I continued to see the dietitian, because the dietitian that was in Lowe's Bridges also had her own practice. So it was kind of a while after I think I went back to start seeing her. But like you have like it's hard with like, because I was out of work and stuff, so it's hard to pay for private dietitians when you're not working. And
no, it's hugely expensive. And I even found like paying for private things, you almost feel worse about it because you're like, I'm putting myself under financial pressure because of my own mental health disorder. And then it makes you feel worse about it. And then it makes it worse.
And then your head's like is bullying you as well. To it's like, what are you going there for? Like, and you're like, why am I going here? Like my head's telling me not to go and I'm paying money and I
don't have the money to be paying for it in the first place.
That's a big thing, like leaving treatment. And I remember saying this to my own psychiatrist, and I was saying like, it's so hard when you leave, like you go from 24/7 care to 1 hour of therapy a week. And she said to me like, well, you've learned tools in inpatient, so you should be able to use them at home. And I'm like, it's not that easy. Like, it baffled me, the lack of services, because I'm like, this is the most fatal mental illness. And then you have teams saying to you, like, it's not our area of expertise. I'm like, it's like going to the GP with like a chest infection, him saying, sorry, this is not my area.
Yeah, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah.
So many people fall through the cracks when it comes to eating disorders in Ireland. Amanda's story is one which is a stark reminder of this. If you don't have the money to pay to go into a private facility, or if your BMI isn't low enough, you may have to wait. This also plays into the eating disorder's hand. If the person with the eating disorder is told that they aren't sick enough, this may reinforce to them that there is, in fact, nothing wrong with them. We must remember that eating disorders are the number one cause of death for all mental illnesses. And it almost took Amanda dying to force the HSE's hand and step up. Surely, early intervention would be more beneficial rather than allowing a person to get to the point of near death. It is the number one cause of death of all mental illnesses. And we think about all of the mental health issues that people in Ireland face, And there are so many, and there are so many that are very, like, very much supported and rightly so,
yeah.
and publicized, and there's a lot of awareness around them, and there's a lot of support available. But, like,
until
this...
Until you get to eating disorders.
Yeah, and this yeah. is the one that kills the most people.
Yeah.
And yet, the services, as you say, are just not there.
It absolutely blows my mind.
Can I ask, was Lois Bridges, did you have to pay for that?
Yeah, see, I didn't have health insurance, yeah. and that's a private...
yeah, because I know a little bit about them.
I was seeing my therapist and stuff, and she was like, look, 1 hour a week is not enough. Mm. Like, you need a higher level of care, and there's nothing in the service that can help you, so we'll have to look for it externally. So they applied to Lois Bridges, and then they applied for HSC funding, so I could have the admission, and that just took months and months and months, and we just weren't hearing anything, and I was just getting sicker and sicker,
yeah.
and I remember, like, it was, I think they applied for the funding in like July or something, mm. and it was December, and I still hadn't heard
wow.
anything. And then in the January, I ended up, like, in A&E, and my team went, like, to contact HSC to say, what is the story with the funding? And
yeah.
they were like, oh, that was refused in December.
And you had never been
nobody
told.
Nobody was,
yeah.
was told. And so, like, my family, like, had to, like, go, like, to, like, the heads in the HSC, and
yeah.
were like, she's going to die. Like, if she dies, then, like, it's
that's on
basically
you.
On you, because,
yeah.
like, we've been fighting so hard to get this funding. And lo and behold, within, like, 2 days, I had the funding. But that really messed up my head, because then I went into treatment saying, I don't deserve this, because they have said no to me about funding, and
yeah.
I've only got it because of everyone kicking up a fuss.
Yeah.
So I mustn't be sick enough to need treatment, because they would have said yeah.
Surely they would have given it to me right away.
Yeah, because
if I needed it.
Just
yeah.
twists
sure,
everything,
yeah.
and that really held me back. I felt like yeah. a lot, because I didn't feel like worthy of treatment because it had been denied.
Yeah.
Even though, like, rationally, like, I tried for, like, well, you're only a number, really. Like, you know, they look at funds, and if they don't have enough, then you're just tick a box kind of thing. Like, but that, I just took it really personally. And
it's just
yeah.
unreal that you would be made to wait for that long, and that it would take people kicking up a fuss and you going into A&E.
Yeah.
You know, in order to be able to access that. Like, you would just think that it makes a lot more sense to kind of catch people before...
Yeah,
they've gone so far that they're kind of, like, at the point of death.
But it's like they nearly challenge you to get that unwell, because, like, you just feel like you're not sick enough.
Yeah.
Like, so you're like, well, I must need to be at the rock bottom in order to,
yeah.
like, whereas they would save so much money, like, if they just helped put in the services. So
exactly. And people didn't need the inpatient treatment
yeah.
and could access community services. Absolutely.
That'd be perfect. And nobody wants to go to hospital.
No.
Like, nobody wants to have to leave their family and, you know,
starting treatment is an incredibly brave step for anyone at any point of their journey. For many suffering eating disorders, there is a process of refeeding that needs to happen before they can start the process of therapy and figuring out the root cause of the eating distress. Refeeding is a process of reintroducing food after a period of malnourishment or starvation. Malnutrition is when your body does not get the nutrients that it needs. It is important to remember that you can be malnourished at any weight. There are different types of malnutrition, and undernutrition is where you can find yourself underweight due to malnourishment. And when you went, did you go willingly? Like, were you wanting to go?
I went willingly, but absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, for the first couple of weeks there, like, the psychiatrist there didn't even think that I was gonna last, because I was traumatized, because I had, like, spent so long at home, like, isolating myself,
mm.
and not meeting up with friends, not socializing, basically just being confined to my bedroom. And then when I went there, like, there was so many people who everyone I didn't know, like, you know, and so it was just trying to trust the staff, and even being around the other patients, like, I couldn't sit in a room with them. Like, every time I'd be in the room with them, I'd just burst out crying, and I'd have to just leg
it out just
the room.
Too
like,
much.
I was like a feral child coming out of the woods. Like, I was like, what is this? But yeah, like, it kind of got better. Like, obviously, when my brain was so malnourished as well. So when I started to kind of
once you
feed and
once you had it, yeah.
Yeah, I just like adapted to the program and got to like trust the staff, and but it took me a long time to kind of to even trust them. Like, you don't tell anybody like what you're going through. Like, I don't tell family even. Like, I don't really speak about it with them because I always feel like they have enough to worry about. Like, they don't need me adding to their worry. And even though, like, my mom, like, she would worry about me, and I hate that because I feel so guilty that I'm causing that worry on her. And, that's a really sad.
And, like, I remember just slowly kind of losing touch with friends because you don't want to do anything because it will, you don't want to have to be pressured to eat something in front of someone. You don't want to be in a situation where you're going to be surrounded by things that you don't want to be surrounded by. You don't want to mess with your little schedule that you have, and you just slowly kind of retreat. Like,
it's you don't realize, I think, until like you have an eating disorder, the amount of socializing that involves food. Like, you know, like, it's like, let's go for lunch, or let's go for dinner, or let's go to cinema, and everything involves food. And it's like so scary for
it's terrifying.
So you just avoid. So I haven't seen like some of my best friends in I don't know how long. Like, I would speak to them like through text or through social media and stuff, but like, I haven't seen them in.
And would your friends kind of know what's going on with you? Do you talk about it?
I don't like. See, I don't want to always be like, feel like I'm a Debbie Downer to them. So I know. Like, you know? So I try, like,
let's talk about my eating disorder, guys.
Like, or just the shit show that goes on in my head. Like, so I don't really like they will ask me how things are, and like I'll be honest with them. Like, but they do know. Like, they are very understanding, and like, they know that like I hate going out and stuff.
One thing that an eating disorder does is steal you away from those who love you. It tells you that those people who are going to challenge your eating behaviors are not safe, when in fact, they are the ones who care about your well-being. Slowly, you retreat from life. It's hard to maintain friendships or romantic relationships when you are not being honest with yourself or your loved ones. This is really difficult, as one of the key things to any person's recovery is their support network. Tell me about relationships. Like, have you been able to have any relationships?
Yeah, like, I was in a relationship for a year, but it was so hard because same thing. Like, even like, I was so like, all I wanted to do was just stay in my room and not have to socialize, and I have to. And then when you're in a relationship, like, even like, just even going like to his house, or like will we order something in, or like, and it was even going like to hotels, and like, it was all like.
And did he know kind of upfront about
everything? Knew. Yeah, I was just completely honest. Yeah. Like, and but even like wanting to go on holidays and stuff, and that was horrific to me. Like, you know, so I couldn't do anything. It wasn't fair on him either. And it was like, there's no room in a relationship for three people. Like, and it's like the eating disorder is an extra person.
And
so
it kind of trumps. I keep saying the word Trump. I need to stop. I need to stop saying that. Not the time or the place.
It's just too. It was just too hard. Like, and like, the relationship was around the time my dad was sick as well.
Yeah.
And my dad passed away. And yeah, it was just. I just ended it then. Like, it was just too.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Eating disorders and disordered behavior are incredibly difficult to move past. The more momentum an eating disorder picks up, and the longer it goes undetected, the more difficult it can be to confront and treat. When relapse occurs, there are a number of implications. An individual may start to believe that recovery is unattainable, and denial and hopelessness may set in. Everyone has a different journey and needs different timeframes and treatments in order to recover. This is why it's essential that a needs-based framework is put into place. Rates of relapse for anorexia and bulimia have been reported to be between 36 and 35% respectively, according to one study. Research also shows that the highest risk of relapse from anorexia is in the first 18 months after treatment. So you went to treatment again.
Yeah.
When was that? The second time that you went?
That was July 2018. I did 12 weeks there, and then I did the day program then for, I think it was about 6 weeks.
And was it going into treatment again? Was it, it had got to a point that you were like very, very ill again? Or did you make a decision to go in again? Or like, did family encourage you to go in? Or?
Everybody was encouraging me to go back. And I was just like, oh, well, what's the point? Like, you know, I just kind of, and then, so I think like with eating disorders as well, with treatment and with, like, you're so ambivalent. Like, you want to recover, but then there's part of you that's afraid to let go of the eating disorder. So that was really strong on me as well. But then I was like, what have I got to lose by going in there? Like, you know, so I just was sick of every day just being the same and just not having a life. And I was like, well, I can only try. And then when I went in, I remember like crying and I was like, I'm just back to square one. I'm such a failure. And they were like, you're never back to square one. And I didn't believe them. I was like, yeah, right, whatever. Like, I totally am back to square one. But it was only when I went in and I was like a couple of days into it. And I was like, I'm actually not back to square one, because I was able to go in. I straight away had to trust with the staff. I was able to speak in groups.
You weren't
away.
Feral.
Yeah, I wasn't weeks. Feral. I wasn't feral. I knew the environment. Like, I knew that it's like a big, huge house. And I just knew the way things ran, so I was much more comfortable. So I was able to get into the program like so much faster. And they even said like the difference in this admission to your last admission was I was like a different person. So that really helped. But I think if I had went somewhere else, like if I had went to say St. Pat's or something like that, I think I would have been the feral person again.
Yeah.
But maybe not, I don't know. But I think it was just the familiarity of it as well helped. Yeah.
And then when you got out, that sounds like a kind of prison. Like, when you got out on the outside, you pretty much just went back to just your old way.
See,
of living.
As well as like that's the thing we were talking about earlier on. Like, my head hadn't caught up at all.
Yeah,
like, I was still like the eating disorder was so strong, and like that's where the downfall is in treatment in Ireland, is that it's a one size fits all. Like, basically, it's 12 weeks and. That's
then
it.
You're kicked out. Then you, and it's
yeah,
like,
and it's
yeah.
not even the unit's fault. Like, it's not even Lowbridge's fault or St. Pat's fault. It's like insurance companies
will pay for a certain amount of days.
Yeah. So you have to adapt your program for that, because most people that go there are like health insurance. So that's a big downfall, because like, you're not ready to leave. Like, and they recognize that as well, but there was nothing that I could
They're
do.
Just trying to cram all of the recovery that they can into
yeah,
those
trying
12
to, like,
weeks.
Yeah, they're trying to kind of as better as they can in that time frame, whereas it really should be needs based as opposed to time based.
Yeah,
and that's what
it
I find
should be kind
a
of
big
like yeah
thing.
as long or as short as
you need
what the individual
people
needs,
could go and they might be okay after 6 weeks. They could be like have a handle on it, but then there's people who need longer, and like I think I was definitely one of those people.
Yeah, the people that you were in treatment with, the other people there. Was it all people with one condition? Was it all people who were suffering from anorexia, or were there any other type of?
Yeah, there was all different types. There was anorexia, there was bulimia, there was binge eating disorder.
Yeah.
They were the three that were, but like there was equal amounts, like, or
yeah.
Sometimes there was more people with binge eating disorder there than there was with anorexia, more people with bulimia. Like, it really, because people come and go while you're there, like, you know, people will.
Sure,
could be on their 7th week when you're in your 1st week, so you see so many people coming in and out. And I think people, like, I've actually spoken to people as well that were afraid to go to treatment, because people who had binge eating disorder were afraid to go to treatment because they were like, oh, I'll just be in with like a load of anorexics, because that's what people think. But it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, it, and as well, like, men as well, like, my first admission, by the time I was leaving, I think there was like 2 girls and 4 men. Like,
wow.
So
and I definitely, the public kind of perception would be that it's anorexic young
girls.
Yeah,
it's a white anorexic
skinny
girl.
Yeah.
Like, and it really couldn't be further from the truth. Like, it's, I've been in with so many people, and also like anorexia and say binge eating disorder, they're as, and bulimia, like, they're as debilitating as each other.
Yeah.
Like,
they're all mental health issues. They just kind of physically show differently.
But then, and they can be equally as fatal. Like there's 2 people that I would have met through, like, time going kind of to treatment and stuff. And one of them died of anorexia and one of them was overweight and she died. Like, so does Like, do you know, so there's just, there's no...
It's not like if you're underweight, if you're overweight, if you're a huge air quotes here, normal weight. You know, you can be a normal weight and still die like, from your disorder.
I remember watching a documentary, the Karen Carpenter.
Yeah.
And I always like hear that she died of anorexia. And so I always assumed, oh, she must have been really underweight. And she was a normal BMI when she died.
Was, yeah. The stages of change model is a process of recovery in which there are five stages. The pre-contemplation stage is evident when a person does not believe they have a problem. The contemplation stage occurs when an individual is willing to admit they have a problem and are now open to receiving help. The fear of change may be very strong. The person transitions into the preparation stage when they are ready to change but are uncertain about how to do it. Time is spent establishing specific coping skills and effective ways of dealing with negative eating disorder thoughts and emotions. The action stage begins when a person is ready to implement their strategy and confront the eating disorder behavior head on. They are willing to face fears in order for change to occur. The maintenance stage evolves when a person has sustained the action stage for approximately 6 months or longer. Understanding that these stages of recovery are not a linear progression may help a person appreciate that relapse does not mean that they are back to square one. These stages are a cycle. A person may have to revisit a stage again throughout their recovery. Though relapse is hard, if you've been through these stages, you have learned a lot about your disorder and have the tools to work through the stages again.
Where are you at now? At now, I'm... a shit show again.
It's a really brave thing to acknowledge that and, you know, recognize that.
Yeah, like things are bad. Like, and that's what like I find. I'm glad as well that I could do this podcast because I find, and like it's brilliant as well because it gives me hope when I hear like stories of people in recovery and stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, like that's great to see because maybe I can get there as well. But I never hear people who are still really stuck in the depths of it, and so that's
and
why
actually
I want
talking about it and being honest about it,
because it's hard. Like I'm really like struggling at the moment, and like they are talking about like another admission, and like part of me can't see that like the seriousness of it because my mind is so you think you're fine, like, you know, and I'm like and they're the team like are so. Like my dietitian would be so worried about me and stuff, and my therapist, and I'm like,
You know, in theory, that you are very sick and that you need to get help and you know to find a way to get better. But the other part is saying to you, well, it's not that big a deal. I'm still functioning. Yeah. I'm still doing this. And
I'll
that.
Compare myself to other people and
say, oh, they're much worse. Or
like look how sick they were. Like
and they were fine. Yeah.
I'm walking around here, like, you know, but you're walking around until you're not walking around, I suppose. Yeah. Like, do you know Stockholm syndrome, where like your abuser is like keeping you captive and hurting you and stuff. Like I find like the eating disorder is like that because it's an abuser in your head and it's bullying you and it's hurting you and it's making you sick, but you're still loyal to it.
Yeah, and you
like
still
you're still
don't
trying to protect it, even
and
though
if the door was open, you might not go.
Yeah, it, like that's the only way I can kind of.
It's a really good analogy.
Yeah, yeah, I remember saying it to my therapist, and she was like, "Can I use that?" I was like, "Go ahead."
She's gonna patent it now. She's gonna come out with a book.
Yeah, but yeah, that's kind of how I help people understand it that don't understand it. And that's what it's like. Like, okay, I hate the fact that I have an eating disorder, but it's so scary with, like, the thoughts of not having it. But, like, I know that, like, my therapist says you have to find stuff that's more important than the eating disorder. So, like, to kind of... And my friend as well, she, like, went back to college and she was saying, like, that's her thing. That's bigger than her eating disorder.
Yeah.
You know, so it gives her a kind of passion and a focus and... I was like, yeah, I need to find my thing.
Do you see a future where you don't suffer as actively as you are now? Like, can you picture that? Or do you kind of just feel like this is it?
It's like, so hard. Like sometimes I'm like, this is me. This is my life. This is how it's going to go forever. And then I see people who, like... have been where I'm at, and then they have, and I'm like, well, if they can do it, then why can't I do it? And so I think hope more than anything. Like, I hope that I can be in some form of recovery, because I feel like I've never gotten to the stage where I'm in recovery, like, as in not in an inpatient setting, I'm managing in the community, like. Yeah, I would love to see what that's like, you know.
The definition of recovery is a return to a normal state of health, mind, or strength, and the action or process of regaining possession or control of something stolen or lost. Recovery from an eating disorder is a vast spectrum. It will mean something different to everyone, and only an individual can say if they do or do not feel truly recovered. No matter where a person is in their journey of recovery, there is always hope. There is no person who is beyond the reach of living a happy and fulfilling life. It may take others much longer to reach that place, but it is always possible. Yeah, recovery is an interesting word. And I know that, you know, I have said that I kind of struggle with that word, recovered or recovery, because, like, for myself, I would be classed as, you know, recovered or in recovery. But even though on the, you know, if you're looking at me, I'm doing very well right now, and I have my kids and my life, and I'm very high functioning. But that's not to say that I don't have that voice in my head, and it doesn't talk to me all the time. Every time I take a sip of something or I eat something, there is a moment that I question myself. And yes, that voice has gotten a lot quieter, but it's still very much there. And I don't kind of see a way where that is ever not going to be there.
Yeah.
And I know you had mentioned you do know someone who kind of has gotten past it, and they do seem to be completely, like, recovered.
But it's only one person. Like, I know so many people with eating disorders who, like you say, like, they're in recovery. But I wouldn't look at it as, like, because I think that panics people as well when you say, when, like, if I was in recovery, I think I'd be like, oh, well, I'm not recovered. So, like, I think the word, like, remission would be like that. It's at bay for now. Like, it's like somebody with cancer, like, do you know what I mean? They'd be in remission, but they're not out of the woods, because it can always just come back. And I think the same for an eating disorder. Like, you can be in remission for years. You can not have any symptoms. Like, you know, you might still have the little niggle voice in the back of your head, but something could happen in your life.
And it could trigger you again.
That's it. Like the switch is just turned back on. And, like, the one person that I know, she was really sick, and, like, she nearly died of, she had a cardiac arrest and everything. She was so sick, but she feels like she went to sleep for 5 years and woke up, and she cannot believe that she ever had an eating disorder. She can't believe that was her life.
Wow.
The voice is obliterated, like, and I truly believe what she says. Like, she's like, I can't believe that I had an eating disorder. I can't believe that I nearly died of an eating disorder. Like, she's like, I just feel like that's a different person. It's not me. And she would say herself that she is fully recovered.
Yeah.
But anybody else I speak to, they would say in recovery. Like,
I like the word remission.
Yeah, I think it makes the most sense. Like, because I think, it's at bay, but it doesn't mean it's gone away.
Yeah, it can just come right back. There is a misconception that when someone is suffering from an eating disorder, that willpower alone can fix the issue. Many people will confront a loved one from a place of frustration and misunderstanding, and therefore use insensitive language like, why can't you just eat? Or why can't you control yourself around food? It's not about willpower. It's about being unable to control the fear in your mind and the overwhelming urges that go hand in hand with disordered eating. Being educated about these issues can help create awareness around unhealthy patterns and behaviors. Many behaviors around healthy living have become so normalized that often people cannot see that a disorder is causing these eating habits. Calorie counting, restriction, rigid routines around food and exercise are all things that can be extremely disordered. Unfortunately, many early signs of eating distress can be missed because of their resemblance to healthy living. Like, in your opinion, like, what's the worst thing someone can say to someone who's, like, actively struggling or kind of on the verge of struggling with all these sorts of things?
I think, like, I actually had an ex-GP. It's an old GP. I would never go back to her again. But she said to me one day, like, oh, I wish I had your willpower to not eat as much as I do.
Jesus Christ.
Like, what? Like, I don't... I was baffled. I didn't.
Did you report her?
No, I just changed GPs.
He just left.
She said that to me, but she said something else as well. I can't remember now. Like, she was like... I was like, are you actually serious? Like,
and you know, the worst part is that she probably, that was just probably such a throwaway comment for her that
she
didn't even
realise.
Funny,
like, yeah. You know, and then she was saying to me, like, would you not eat this or this? Because they don't really have a lot of calories. And I was like, is she giving me tips here or something? Or go,
is
what
she helping
the hell
me?
Is going on here? Like, yeah, no, she was like, I've had like so many dodgy things said to me, like, but willpower seems to be a lot. Like, that would come from a lot of people. Like, that would come from friends and stuff joking.
As like, in, like, they're complimenting you that you have willpower?
Yeah, and it's, like, not willpower. It's fear. It's terror.
Yeah.
That's making you not eat. It's not...
It's not that I'm really disciplined.
Yeah, it's not a game that I'm playing. Yeah. Like, it's something that consumes your mind.
And why do you think people say things like that? Do you think it's just the ignorance? Or do you think it's their own kind of, like... insecurities, or they just don't know any better, they're trying to make conversation.
I think all of that, but I think like with the ignorance thing, it's not even like in probably in a bad way, it's ignorance to knowing what the illness is, like it's just lack of knowledge of what it's about. And if they lived in their heads for 5 minutes, they'd be like, get me the hell out of here, like it's just not. I think a lot of people as well have like, I think a lot of people have eating disorders that don't know they have eating disorders.
Yes,
like,
they do.
So many. Like, I'm like, listen to people talking and I'm like, that's classic eating disorder, but they're not diagnosed.
It's passed
like,
off as a diet or a...
Or
know,
a healthy living.
A health kick or, yeah.
Yeah, like, or a gym. Just, like, they like to go to gym and stuff and I'm like, you're obsessed. Like, it's not healthy.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think so, like... So much of the population has some sort of disordered
Absolutely.
Eating or a disordered way of exercising, and they just don't realize that that's not healthy.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, it goes back to the classic image of the white skinny girl.
Yeah, they're
and
like,
that's,
I don't have an eating disorder because that's an eating disorder.
And yeah, and this doesn't look like that, so I'm fine.
Yeah, like you can even have anorexia and be normal weight, like. Mm-hmm. They call it atypical anorexia. I don't like the name. I just think they should just call it anorexia because I just think it makes people feel crap.
Yeah.
By saying like atypical, but I think people don't realize that you can be normal weight and be anorexic. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. There's such a lack of awareness and a lack of openness about it that people just don't realize. And I'd say people can go through their entire lives not knowing that the way they feel is actually a symptom of a mental health issue.
Like even with like orthorexia and stuff, like I know it's not in the DSM, I think.
Yeah.
But like I think the amount of guys in particular that I think have that who do not have a clue that they have it because they just think that it's just a lifestyle. And like even like all their protein shakes that they take and all these things, like I'm like, their kidneys are probably going to be in bits and years to come, like, you know, but they just think it's healthy and it's really not.
Orthorexia is a term coined in the late 90s to refer to an intense fixation with healthy eating, focusing on the quality and purity of food. A person's self-esteem is based on eating healthy foods. They are increasingly critical and more rigid about eating. They may feel as if certain foods are dangerous. A person may feel guilt or shame when unable to maintain dietary or fitness standards. In today's society, it can be easy for orthorexia to go unnoticed.
Yeah, the whole kind of fitness industry.
Like, I am all for, you know, staying strong and working out if that's what you like to do.
Yeah.
But it can be very dangerous.
Totally.
Like, even I was... You know, I try not to scroll, but we all scroll.
Yeah.
And I was scrolling and something came up in my feed, you know, it was a sponsored post from a gym. I don't think gyms are supposed to be open at the moment, but anyways, it was a sponsored post from a gym and, you know, just showing like these before, I hate before and after pictures.
I
hate them.
Don't get me started on those.
But it was before and after picture and I just the person looked so unwell in both pictures. And I'm like, that is not, that whatever is happening here is not healthy.
And they give a lot of diet advice as well. Like, and like they're not qualified to give people
diet and advice. Like just a lot of triggering images and a lot of triggering words being used.
Yeah.
And for someone who is not struggling at all or is not susceptible to, you know, being vulnerable in that way, I'm sure that's fine. But like I'd say the majority of people who are following that sort of content are susceptible and are you know, vulnerable to being triggered by images and words. And
that's what kind of really annoyed me a couple of weeks ago when the gyms were all campaigning to stay open and they were using mental health as a key word to I was absolutely fuming because I was like, don't just use mental health now because it's cool to use it to keep your gyms open. Like, it's, do you know, mental health happens all year round. Like, do you know, when do we hear gyms talking about mental health 365 days a year? Do you know what I mean? And it was just suddenly mental health was being...
because it's good for business.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, I do. I get that, you know, exercise is a way of improving your mental health.
Like, I don't doubt for a second that, like that it's not. Like, mental health, exercise and stuff definitely helps people's mental health. But
when you're in...
A good mind frame
and you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
As we continue to grow and learn about more helpful language around food and weight, we start to see how individual it can be. While one person may have no trouble with comments on their appearance, others may find it extremely challenging. This can be tricky if you want to reach out to a person who seems to be struggling with food and body image issues. How does one broach the subject without actually mentioning weight? It also raises the important question of how necessary it is to comment on other people's physical appearance. I would challenge you to consider how much you comment on how people look, whether positive or negative. How about broadening the spectrum of ways in which we think about other people? How can we uplift our loved ones without using any physical descriptors when we want to give them a compliment?
Because I've seen it so many times, like people with eating disorders who go into recovery and then suddenly they're gym instructors or they're
100%. We were talking about this, I think last week, of how people find some sort of niche for themselves where they're allowing themselves to still have their disorder, but in like society accepts as a healthy way.
Yeah.
You know, so people who go into like becoming a gym instructor or becoming a dance tutor or a dancer or like mad into whatever fad it is that allows them to eat in a certain way and
veganism
exercise.
And
exactly. Like some sort of excuse.
Yeah.
And whether it's an excuse for everybody else to accept it or for even for themselves, and they're lying to themselves.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh no, but it's fine. I'm fine now because I may.
They're just masking a different behavior, a different way of.
Yeah.
But it's getting acceptable. Away with it, kind of. Yeah.
That's, again, something that is very complex and very dangerous because it's hard to kind of distinguish. That's not to say that all vegans have eating disorders or all gym instructors.
Yeah.
But it's really complex. Like,
it's just funny because like it's the amount of people who I've met with eating disorders, like even in treatment and stuff, like the amount of like, and they're like, I'm a vegetarian or I'm a vegan. Like I'd say 99% of them would say these things
because
like,
they think that that's going to be a diet that is lower calorie.
Just another way of restricting their intake.
We talked about, you know, the things that people maybe shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. What are the things that are helpful to you? Like, you know, for friends or family members who, because obviously like your friends and family members are very concerned about you.
Yeah.
And what do you find helpful?
Don't really find a lot of things helpful. Like I just feel like I don't want them to say anything to me like about it, and it's, I know it's wrong because like family support is huge to help people with recovery. I just really struggle with that part, and it's not that my family aren't supportive, they're like totally the most supportive people in the world, but I just feel like I'm trying to protect them by not like, so like my mom would say things like she'll go, oh, have you lost weight? Or like, you know, and I'm like, especially if I haven't, like that really annoys me because I'm like, that's your eyes are deceiving you now because I actually haven't, like, you know, so But I suppose with things like maybe not to say more things like not to say is like, I remember being in treatment and my mom coming to visit me and she's like, oh, you look really well.
I wonder, is there a way that she or other people could rephrase that? That it wouldn't be triggering and that it wouldn't be kind of like really, I don't know, like it's almost like it's offensive. And yeah, that's the furthest thing. Like, and of course, people, she just means well and she just wants to tell you that she loves you and that, you know, your eyes do look bright.
Yeah.
But all we hear is, you look a certain way.
Yeah, it's like you're saying, like you've gained weight when gaining weight is the most scariest part of like your your disorder. Like,
so I wonder, is there something that she could say to you that wouldn't?
I don't know. Look, I spoke about this with my therapist before, and she always says that you cannot win with an eating disorder, so you're better off not saying anything at all. Like, you're just better off not saying you look well or you don't.
So not
well.
Commenting just on don't comment, like, how just, someone looks.
Yeah, just don't
be like, say, how are you?
Like, you seem happier.
Or how are you feeling? Like, so maybe talking about an emotion would be helpful as opposed to a physical.
Yeah.
Of just, you look a certain way.
Yeah, because you'll never win. Like, you...
Like, just you seem really...
Bubbly today.
Bubbly. Are you really energetic? Did you have a good sleep? Or
I think, like, just do not bring it to the physical because it's just like a red rag to a bull. It's just like, do not.
It really
there.
Is,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, just, it makes me, like... Like, I don't mind if people say it, like say if I put up a photograph of myself now, it would be like, I'm like a catfish myself on social media, like, I don't look like myself. But like, people, like, if they come to the picture, like, I don't mind that, like, do you know, I'm just like I don't mind that. But I remember a while ago somebody messaged me and was like, whatever you're doing, keep doing it because you look absolutely great. And I was
oh, and was this someone who was aware of your journey?
Yeah, they knew.
They were aware that you're in an active illness.
She wouldn't know me well enough to probably know that, like... But, like, I'd be honest on social media and stuff.
Yeah,
so
you are. You're very honest.
Yeah, so I don't...
I think your bio says, I am not in recovery.
Yeah, because I was getting, like, messages from people who are really sick and stuff. And, you know, straight away, like, messaging me and telling me their way. And then it was, like, triggering the life out of me.
So much, yeah.
Yeah, so we kind of put that there. And it has helped. People have stopped doing
that.
Okay,
like, good.
I had to do it.
That's really unhelpful to be messaging you those things.
Yeah,
what did you say to that person who said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it?
I just said, don't be fooled by social media. Because, like, it's literally 1 second of a person's life. I was like, thanks, but, like, I really am not doing well, so don't let me feel it. And then I got really paranoid because I was like, am I being fake on social media? Like, I want to be honest. Like, I don't want to, like, make myself out that I'm fine because I don't want to, like, lie.
As someone who wishes to help a loved one suffering with an eating disorder, it can be difficult to know how to approach the situation, especially if it is clear that the person struggling doesn't want to discuss it. They may be uncomfortable having the conversation and protective of their particular behaviors. If you are unsure what to do, you could simply remind this person that you love them and are here for them if they ever need you for support. This can be difficult as you probably want to step in and help them. Be sensitive and know that everyone's situation is different, and reaching out to professionals may offer you a device for the loved one you wish to help.
And I, like, always am conscious of, like, photographs. Like, probably part of it is, like, body dysmorphia because I feel like I look bigger as well. But then part of it is, like, if what other people are saying is true and I am, like, do look thin, and I don't want to trigger people either. So, like, I'm always kind of conscious of what I post.
Yeah.
And, because I would hate to be the cause of somebody, of triggering somebody. And that's why I hate those, like, you always get them on, like, Eating Disorder Awareness Week and stuff, and people's, like, before and after photographs.
I never do. And, you know, there have been, like, every time those awareness weeks or awareness days roll around, I always look back on old photos of myself, and there have been times where I've almost posted one and then I'm like, no, because number one, that might be really triggering to someone. And number two, someone might look at that and think, I look great.
Yeah. And then you kind of screw your head up altogether.
Like, do you know? Yeah. Like, no, like, I just... This is where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And those before and after and pictures,
it's another thing what I hate about those before and afters is that it's basically saying, eating disorder or a weight disorder.
Yeah.
Like, it's reinforcing that belief Yeah. That it's a weight disorder and it's not.
And that this one person was bad and this one person is good, which also is not true.
Exactly.
It's the same person. Like people put it at a different stage.
And it's like an unwritten, like everybody knows, like don't do it. Like everybody knows it could potentially trigger somebody else. And I know everyone's responsible in a way for their own triggers, but also just be like, what's the word we're looking
mindful
for? Like, yeah, of other people who might be triggered by that. And that I would be devastated if I did that to somebody else, like, you know. So yeah, no, I hate that really annoys me.
Yeah. And I wonder, is it the same thing? Because I know a lot of people who struggle with weight maybe in a different way are really proud of those before and after photos, you know, whether it's, you know, from smaller to bigger or from bigger to smaller. And a lot of people are really proud of those photos. I don't know. Is it a personal thing for me that before and after photos are really triggering? Because like for me, I was bigger at some of my worst times.
Yeah, that's so common. Yeah. Like people are mentally in a worse state, even if their body doesn't reflect that. Like it doesn't matter because it's not a weight disorder. Like that's what I find as well. Like I don't know about people who. Like people who post like who have lost weight and stuff like
yeah like might the, be. There are so many accounts there like with the weight transformation journeys
and like I get why they do it because they're proud of themselves, but then like are they looking for recognition from other people that they know that they've done well? So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's again it's kind one. Of reinforcing that bigger body was bad and that this smaller body is good.
Yeah, it is really.
So again, it's a really complicated area. Like I suppose for every person and their own journey, you just have to know what your own motivations are for showing certain photos or thinking a certain way. And no one can tell you if what you're doing is healthy or not. Like,
you
kind of just have to know for yourself whether or not how you're acting and how you're behaving and how you're thinking is coming from
where it's coming from.
A healthy place or not.
Yeah.
It's hard to recognize that though when you're in the middle of it.
Totally.
Isn't it?
Because you're so obsessed and you're so blinded as well by everything.
Yeah. So for you, people kind of commenting on your eating disorder and talking about it is actually really unhelpful for you.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, and again, it's going to differ person to person. Like some people really want to talk about it.
Yeah.
A lot. But do you think that for the majority of people who are kind of in active illness, that they don't want to talk about it?
I think, because I think like the eating disorder, like part of your head doesn't want to talk about it because it doesn't want you to get rid of it. Like it wants to stay.
And the more you talk about it, the more you're going to be confronted to doing something about it. Yeah.
So it's like, just say nothing, just be quiet. And I think that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah, I definitely like... I don't think I had told a single person. I hadn't said the words out loud for like 8 years. Gosh, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't say the words because I didn't want to really admit it. It was kind of like, oh, I might kind of allude to the fact.
Yeah.
But I would never actually say the words because
you're afraid it's going to be taken off you or something. And even though like nobody can actually take it off you. They can just help you to... like develop kind of coping strategies that won't be so.
It's hard though, because you know, for all of our loved ones, they want to help and they want to talk about it, and usually talking about something is the way to
and like I know solution. Like it's not like, although like that's what people with eating disorders like, well, a lot of people don't want to talk about it, but it's not necessarily a good thing that you don't want to, like it's probably the worst thing that you can do, is because it's isolating you even further. Like it's,
I wonder, you know, and again, it's just going to differ person to person, is, you know, someone just offering to be there and not necessarily naming what it is, but just saying, look, I can see you're struggling and I am here if you want to talk.
Yeah.
And consistently reminding you that you're loved and they're a safe space to talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Because I don't think, like, it's hard, well, personally, like, it would be hard for me to willingly go to somebody who is not a therapist, or, like, do you know what I mean? Because I would, like, speak to my therapist or speak to my dietitian or...
Sure.
But, yeah, I think if that's, like, you feel like if that doorway is open, that you can go to somebody that they have said, look, I'm here and I can support you, like...
Yeah.
If you need to, I'm not going to, like, smother you, but...
Yeah.
Come to me if you want, like...
Yeah, I think that's... It's a good thing for people to know, because... Yeah. I know, like, my own friends and family, you know, a lot of the times didn't know how to talk to me.
Yeah.
They just, you know, some of them would just kind of shout at me, just fucking eat.
Yeah.
Just eat something. Yeah. And it's just like, get over it. Like, and it's like, oh, thanks. Oh, geez. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
And that's really the most unhelpful thing.
And there's things like, I find, like, if my mom saw me eat something, like, then she'll buy it in bulk, like,
oh, stop, you know? Yeah.
It was just like, and that's like, you just do not do that. Like, I remember when I came out of treatment the first time and I was eating, like, one of my snacks was rice cakes or whatever, like, and hummus or whatever, but I remember opening the press
and like, she had like 50 of them,
shelf was just full of rice cakes, and I was like, I don't fucking want them now, like, do you know, like, it just literally like sparks the rage in your head, and like,
and
like,
you
just
can
you see me eating it once, it doesn't mean that I bloody love it. Like,
I know. And you can see where she's coming from, because she just wants to care for you. And she's like, Jesus, she really likes this. So I'm going to, like, give it to her all day, every day. But it's like, you really have to go easy, don't you? You just have to, like, let people go at their own pace.
Yeah, I just think it's such a fine line.
Like, it really is.
I feel for people, like, carers, and I feel for, like, family members, and because it must be so hard for them. Because we can be so irrational.
So irrational.
Like, yeah.
And it's like, you do one thing one day and you do the same thing the next day and it'll be the complete wrong thing to do or say.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But it's just, I suppose, recognizing that, you know, it's not your fault. It's not their fault. It's a mental health issue. And it behaves very erratically.
Totally.
And it makes the person behave very erratically.
Mm.
And you just kind of have to go at it with that knowledge that it's going to be very tricky. For many people, the key to recovery can be something tangible, such as the desire to become a parent or to find happiness within a relationship. Holding on to such a hope can be someone's lifeline. Understanding that the important things in life are actually quite simple and they have absolutely nothing to do with appearance or weight. Your worth is defined by so much more than any one thing, and it certainly has nothing to do with what you look like. Remember, your weight may fluctuate, but your worth never will. What is your biggest hope for the future?
That I can be in recovery and see, and just be able to, like, not have to think about, like, like, not have to go to a restaurant and, like, read the meal, the menu before you even go. Like, just be able to feel happy. Like, because I just feel like at the moment I just don't ever really feel happy because my head is constantly bullying me, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, but in the future, like I want to meet somebody. I want to have kids. I want to have, like, my own house. And, like, they're all things that, like, I assumed I would have. Like, I used to say when I was younger, and it's just like, lol, now when I think about it, but like, I used to, like, oh, by 27 I'll have my first child, and like, because I used to think, like, when I was younger, 27 was real old. And now I'm like, oh, I've definitely passed that stage, like, you know. So, but like, I worry then as well, because I'm like, I feel like sometimes I get panicked. I'm like, I don't have time for all this. I don't have enough time to recover, to like have to meet somebody, to have kids, like, you know, like, that makes me panic, because then I'm like, oh my god, my biological clock is ticking, and I start panicking about everything. But like, yeah, I really hope, like, I would love to have a baby by 35. Like, that's like, so that gives me a few years to get my shit together.
It is possible. Do you want to share your Instagram handle? Because I personally love, like, that's how we met.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And I love, you know, how real you are, because I definitely think you're very real online, and yes, you do post really nice pictures and kind of some happy content, but you also say, you know, things are not great.
I like, kind of like, to educate people, because somebody messaged me and was like, I had no idea, like, she's like, I had no idea that there was an eating disorder that was binge eating disorder. She's like, I never knew that that was a thing. Like, I think she just thought people just eat and get overweight. And I was like, oh no, like that is.
No, that's it.
And it's so common. Like, it's
so common.
So, so common. And she was like, so I'm so glad that, like, I've learned this. Like, and I was like, that's like the purpose of why I want to, like, share things, just to, like, educate people on. Yeah. So it's, my handle is A Blog By Me. It's on Instagram. Yeah, that's where I kind of post most of my things.
So if you're not already, go and follow Amanda.
Follow me.
Do it now. Thank you so much for being so open and honest. I know it's not easy to do, especially when you're in the thick of it, because as you say, it's almost like giving up a bit of its power and you don't want to. And I know what that's like. So I am looking forward to seeing what happens. I know your journey is not going to be straightforward. It's not going to be easy, but
like, I would love to come back in recovery, like, you know, and like a different kind of outlook on life. Like, I can just hope that that happens. Like, that's all I can really do is just keep my fingers crossed.
Well, we will certainly keep our fingers crossed too.
Thank you.
If you need medical advice, please speak to a professional or contact BodyWise, the national charity for eating disorders in Ireland, on 01 210 7906. Thank you again for listening, and I hope that this conversation has been helpful to you in some way. I'm Renee Von Medding, and this has been Disordered.